You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Bret Easton Ellis wrote his debut novel, Less Than Zero, when he was still an undergrad. It became a huge bestseller, and for many readers, his characters were icons of urban and urbane life in the 1980s. 25 years later, he revisits those same characters in his latest novel, Imperial Bedrooms. It's published by Knopf, and I'm very pleased that it brings Bret Easton Ellis back to our show. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what was it about these characters that made you want to spend another few years with them? Was it that they were so lovable?
Well, I don't know if lovability has anything to do with writing fiction or wanting to create characters. I mean, if I look at my favorite novels or my favorite characters, I don't think any of them are exactly lovable. I don't know. Humbert, anybody?
Dostoevsky.
The Great Gatsby. Madame Bovary. I mean, there's a lot. Lovability has nothing to do with why you want to stick around with a book.
I was just making a joke there, Bret.
I know, but I've been kicked around so much for that I'm overly sensitive.
Well, actually, I
can't take the joke.
Nicer than your protagonist in American Psycho, anyway. But the cover picture does have is a silhouette of somebody with devil's horns.
Yes. Well, there is a bit of the devil, I guess, in the narrator in this book, and that might be why my genius cover designer, Chip Kidd, decided to go with this image, because, I don't know, it's really striking. I mean, I thought it was a Viking the first time I saw it, and actually it's not. Chip said, I said, Chip, what is a Viking doing on the cover of this book? He said, no, it's the devil, dude. So that's it.
How have these people changed over the years?
Or
your feelings toward them.
It's not a group portrait, you know. I was always interested in Clay, the narrator, and I had reread Less Than Zero when I was working on my last novel, Lunar Park, and I hadn't read the book since it was published. And I reread it and thought, oh, okay, fine. And then this voice in the back of my head kept whispering, where is he now? Where is Clay now? What is the boy of 19 doing as a man of 43 or 44. And I just couldn't get it out of my head. And I started to answer these questions about, well, where is he? What is he doing? Is he happy? Is he not? Is he married? Is he? And I started to make an outline, and that outline began to form itself into a novel. And I was really thinking about Clay and how he's changed. Well, how has he changed? Well, he's successful. He's a successful screenwriter in Los Angeles, and he also has appetites. He's hungry, and he's obsessed, and he's entitled, and he's ragingly narcissistic. So he's definitely a long way away from that drifting, passive boy from Less Than Zero.
Well, how does writing in the first person help you tell this story?
Look, every writer has their own way of working a novel. And for me, I've always found the way that I enjoy working the most is through first person.
You start off by writing I, and then you follow it from there.
I don't know. I like writing a novel through a narrator's voice. There's something about it that's fun, and it grips me. I like it. And it also, I mean, yeah, because you get to play around with, you know, different kind of voices in every book because every narrator obviously is different. And it's just a stylistic thing.
Well, it's understandable that you object when people ask you about the autobiographical aspects of your novels, but you invite that to some degree when you write in first person. It's how else do you get into the mind of somebody like American Psycho unless you do it in first person?
I no longer object to the autobiographical accusations.
Oh, you've come a long way.
I have come a long way. Oh, I've come even longer, an even longer way than you think, much longer than you have any idea. You know, look, American Psycho is a perfect example that you brought up because
– well, some people took you literally, and that caused a lot of trouble at the time, although it was quite obvious – to people, to many others, that you were getting into the mind of a very hateful person. But there are people like that in the real world.
There are people like that in the real world. And I also look, American Psycho, and this is something that I have only now been able to admit or feel, you know, capable of admitting, is that novel came from a very personal place. It was a very personal novel, and it came from my experiences of loneliness and alienation and isolation when I had moved here and I was entering into the world of adults. That is where that novel came from. It did not come from me wanting to write a sweeping indictment of Wall Street. It started out as that, and I identified with Patrick Bateman a lot. And then as the novel flowed forward, it became about many other things. But every novel, I think, starts in a very personal place like that.
But you were a huge success at the time. Why were you feeling so lonely? You were.
I think that's exactly why I was. I mean, I think that's exactly why I was feeling. I mean, at 23, and none of my friends were, and it was a strange position to be in.
And a lot of writers are ruined by that experience, having such early success. It's hard to live up to it.
Many people say I have been. Many of my critics say I have.
It seems to me what you've done is you just kept on issuing more and more challenges to yourself as a way to get past that.
Well, you know what? I don't disagree with that. I do find I want to be challenged by a work by a novel that I'm working on. And I think that's why I've written so few. I mean, because it is first of all, it's hard to find something that you really want to spend a couple of years with material-wise in terms of like sitting down with a novel. But yeah, I guess I do gravitate more towards challenges, and that excites me as a novelist. That gets me going.
I understand that you read a lot of Raymond Chandler to prepare to write Imperial Bedrooms.
Oh, that was a deliriously happy year.
He is the greatest metaphor writer perhaps
ever. But yet,
is that what you got from him?
And I am the least good metaphor writer ever, so maybe that's one of the reasons why he was so entrancing to me. And I'm someone who never uses metaphor. Most of my characters are too narcissistic to see how one thing would look like another. That's part of the problem. So I never use metaphor. But no, it wasn't that. It was just that, it's just the prose style. It's the existentialism. Whatever. He's just a great writer.
And that noir atmosphere. And
the noir atmosphere is really what kicked me off into really wanting to do Imperial Bedrooms and wanting to do a much more noirish sequel to Less Than Zero.
People in the novel call Clay a narcissist. Several of the characters are rather manipulative and dishonest. Were you concerned at all about how people would relate to these characters? Are you past that now?
So past it when I wrote Less Than Zero. I don't know. I mean, I get it why some readers need that. I get it why they want to open a book and empathize and care about people. It's just not care about these made-up people because I guess it strokes their own vanity or something. But my favorite books, I mean, if I look back at anything from all of my favorite books. That's not the key reason why I like the book. I don't like Lolita because I love Humbert Humbert, and I don't like Anna Karenina because I like Anna Karenina. The list goes on and on and on. I mean, I like the book because I like the vision and the sensibility of the author. So, I get it all the time. I get like, why should we care about these people? Why are we reading this book? Why are these people doing these terrible things to each other?
Because people do these terrible things.
Well, I think there you go. I think that's one answer. That's a big answer.
My guest is Bret Easton Ellis, whose latest novel is Imperial Bedrooms. It's published by Knopf. Much of the book is about acting, pretending, and creating an illusion. And I've talked to any number of writers who've also acted or actors who've written about the whole matter of creating characters and becoming their characters while they write them. Now, you've also written screenplays, so you've thought of that crossover, I'm sure, on another level.
Well, I think I've been writing about actors for a long time. I think Patrick Bateman is the ultimate actor. And certainly actors and actresses seem to pop up in my books frequently. And I think there's a great deal of acting in our everyday American lives. I mean, I think who I am with you right now is very different than who I am with my best friend or a lover or my parents or, whoever. I mean, I think there's a degree of acting in everyday life. In terms of the whole notion of what the metaphor of acting means, I think I've explored it a lot. I actually have. But I've never acted myself. I mean, in terms of being a professional actor, I've never done anything, never been in a movie or been in a play or anything like that.
But it's kind of like the method when you get into the emotional state of a character that you're creating. It's
You are completely correct. And you are with that character for many, many, many years if you're working on a novel. But also at the same time, you have to be a technician. You know, you just can't be Patrick Bateman. You just can't be Clay from Imperial Bedrooms. You have to be a technician, and you've got to be able to contain the performance in a way. And that's also part of, I mean, personally, what I think is enjoyable about writing a book is that controlling of the performance of the narrator, who I talked about, you know, earlier.
Well, you're living in L.A. now. There's a scene in the book where the beautiful actress refuses to be with Clay, the narrator, because she says, "You're just the writer." Have writers fallen so much in Hollywood since the time Marilyn Monroe married Arthur Miller?
Well, Clay is hardly Arthur Miller. I mean, I wouldn't put him up there. But he is actually a very successful screenwriter, as success with screenwriters go. I mean, screenwriters are about as common in Hollywood as actors are. I mean, there's a lot of them out there, and there are very, very few of them who are successful. And Clay is one of them, actually, which is why this young actress ends up with him, because he is – promised her a part in a new film that he's written and produced, and that's in the middle of casting, and that's how that relationship begins. But by the end, she begins to, I think, resent him a bit.
Is it true that Duncan Sheik is writing a musical version of American Psycho?
It is true.
Too bad Bernard Herrmann isn't still alive.
Oh, I know. That would be perfect.
So, what do you think the music should sound like? You don't really want songs that you can go away humming.
Yeah, I think you do. I mean, look, you know, Sweeney Todd has one of the most gorgeous scores ever, and it's one of the bloodiest musicals ever, too. So I don't know. I mean, I think it would be great if and Duncan Sheik's songs are usually quite tuneful. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's going on, where that project is at this stage.
Although maybe you would have preferred Elvis Costello, because I'm assuming you borrowed the title from the 1982 Elvis Costello album, Imperial Bedrooms.
I did. Actually, the album's called Imperial Bedroom. I added the S because there actually is a song on the extra edition, whatever, CD that is called Imperial Bedrooms. But yeah, because once I figured out that the book was going to be about sexual exploitation and in Hollywood, and I wanted to use another Elvis Costello title, this was the one that made by far the most sense.
My previous guest was David Lipsky.
I couldn't believe it. I ran into him in the hallway. We had not seen each other in, I think, 10 or 12 years.
But you went to Bennington with him, Jonathan Lethem, Donna Tartt, Jill Eisenstadt.
Yes, yes. All of us were there at the same time.
Was there something in the water? Well, I was just thinking.
Something in the vodka?
Does that happen all the time at Bennington, or
no,
was that just a
no.
unique situation?
I think it was just a unique situation. I think it was just a certain point in time, and I don't know why all of those people at that one place at the one time went on and had, you know, fairly nice careers as writers.
So do you you switch back and forth between writing screen for television and the movies and writing larger fiction, or are you going to stick to novels for a while?
Well, it takes me a long time to write a novel. I was working on various projects while I was working on Imperial Bedrooms on the side, and you know, I don't know. It depends if another book, you know, announces itself to me. I mean, it's not something that I'm pragmatic or logical about. It's something that you have to feel, and you have to, like, you know, have an emotional response to a subject in order to sit down and write about it. And I don't know if I've had that moment yet.
Well, this book is called Imperial Bedrooms. It's from Knopf. My great thanks to Bret Easton Ellis for being our guest once again on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.